Hello, hello. Welcome to the inaugural episode of The Orbital Tribe. I am Mignon, the host and creator of this podcast. Some of you might know me from Tyler Perry's Sisters. Some of you might have seen my Christmas movie, Never Alone for Christmas. I have a social media profile. I'm trying to think what else. I'm around. That's all I can say is I'm around. And thank you for tuning in. So I know some of y'all are like, so Mignon, I know what the word orbit means. And I know what the word orbital means. But what do you mean by the orbital tribe? Well, I was born on a Friday. No, I'm kidding. Orbital kind of describes how I've always felt and always moved. Y'all know that TV show Friends, the friend group, you know, Monica and Rachel were best friends. Monica and Ross were brother and sister. Ross and Chandler were friends. And then Joey and Chandler were best friends. And then there was Phoebe. She was a part of the group, but she was kind of the one who orbited the group. She was kind of off doing her own thing. And I've always been that way in my friend groups, in my family. My family, straight up black sheep. Y'all, I was crazy enough to try to overthrow the patriarchy at Thanksgiving and Christmas at like 12. Because in my family, there are so many female grandchildren on my mom's side and my dad's side, now that I think about it. And we would be, you know, at my grandmother's house. We're team do too much. Our Thanksgiving and Christmas menu is turkey, ham, duck, fish. I already said duck. One year we did pheasant. Sometimes we do a prime rib. Sometimes we do an oyster dressing and we do a regular cornbread dressing. And then we do a sweet potato pie, pecan pie, and three cakes and string beans, collard greens, eggplant, militant. Like, that's not even all of it, right? So we're working ourselves to death. We're cranky. We're tired. This set of granddaughters have done dishes. This set of granddaughters have done dishes. And everyone's done their turn, but there's still so much more to do. And I'm sitting there trying to, you know, again, overthrow the patriarchy. I'm like, what about the men? Where are the men? How come we have to do everything? And mind you, I'm already black sheep at this point, right? For some reason, that's the lot that fell on me. And it didn't go over well. I want to let the younger girls who are watching and tuning in. First of all, I'm honored that you're tuning in. If there's some steps in life that I can save you from taking, I pray I can. And I think that's why I'm doing this podcast I think this is why God wants me to do it, because we all have to learn the lessons in life, right? In the school of life, nobody skips a grade. We all have to learn the lessons, but we don't have to learn them as difficultly. So my hope is to impart as much as I can so that you don't have to go through the same hardships, because you're already going to have hardships of your own. Like, there's no way around it. But if there's a way for you to not struggle with certain things, then I've done my part. And that does my heart some good. So, okay, back to me trying to overthrow the patriarchy. Dumb, never went over well. I'm not telling you to be quiet, younger girls. I'm telling you that there is a time. When Jesus was 12 years old, he stayed behind for a festival in Jerusalem. His parents were 3 days into journeying home. Y'all, I'm not sure if it's exactly 3 days, but I know he was 12 and he stayed behind and he was in the temple learning from the teachers and the scribes. And Mary and Joseph come back after days of thinking he was with them already. And they're like, son, why would you do that to us? And he says, did you not know I had to be about my father's business? But the Bible said that he went with them and he submitted himself to them. Girls, boys, there is a time for everything. 12 years old in your family is not the time to try to overthrow the patriarchy. Now, don't get me wrong. This past Christmas, I said the same thing. It still didn't go over well. Why? I'm black sheep. Okay, that's just what it is. And I remember I used to work for this nonprofit organization, and they sent us to this teachers conference. And I just see how the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord with this one. And I remember this class that I went to take. It was one of the breakout sessions. And in this class, they talk about the different archetypes that kids are in their families and how they show up at school. And I just know that this was God leading me to this class. So these are the four archetypes, and find yourself in this one. There's the hero. The hero is the kid who is not only a star athlete, but they also have a 4.0 GPA. They never get in trouble at school. The hero archetype is trying to bring honor to the family, right? Then there's the mascot. The mascot is the peacemaker, the one who's trying to make a joke about everything, get everyone laughing on the same page. Guys, we don't have to talk about this. Let's laugh. Let's get over it. That person is trying to not make light of the family, but to, I guess, just kind of be the peacemaker of the family, to like keep the waters calm. And then there's the scapegoat archetype. I'm sure you already know what this one is, and I'm sure you can tell which one I was. Scapegoat archetype. They're the one who gets in trouble. They're the one who acts out. They're the one who's going to ask why. They're the one who's probably going to be labeled as disobedient or defiant, because they are trying to say, hey, family, we have issues. We need to work on them. And so it's not always, hey, guys, let's work on these issues. That kid might get in trouble at school, to highlight, hey, we're not perfect. So it's kind of like they take on the role of, literally, like in the Bible, there was a scapegoat that the sins of Israel was placed upon and then released into the wilderness. So this person takes on the role of troublemaker to highlight, hey, family, we have issues. Okay. And then there's the lost child. This is the kid that doesn't ask for too much, doesn't make a lot of noise. They don't necessarily get the star student award, but they also don't get in trouble a lot. They try not to need as much in order to like take the burden off of the family. They say, hey, if I sit back, then the family won't have as much of a burden, right? So the hero is trying to bring honor. Mascot is trying to bring peace. Scapegoat is trying to bring change, truth, highlight our issues. The lost child is trying to not bring any more burden, right? If I sit back, then maybe all of our problems will go away. And if I don't need anything. And this is the thing, you might have played that different roles at different times in your life. You don't have to necessarily be one for your whole life. I know that I was scapegoat for sure, but not in the sense of being suspended in school or having detention. I definitely got detention, but you know, I wasn't cussing teachers out or nothing like that. But I definitely was that kid who got on her report card, especially like in elementary school, talkative, defiant. Like at 8 years old, I knew what the word defiant meant because I had been labeled that. Yeah, so I've always been kind of this, you know, scapegoat archetype, in the sense that I am not afraid to speak the truth. I am not afraid to speak the truth. Now, I have gotten older. I have gotten wiser. What I do now, especially if I'm in places where I know the truth is not welcome, I know I am not welcome. So I stay home. I am introverted. I've always been introverted. And that kind of all goes together, right? Being kind of that scapegoat archetype, right? Not afraid of the truth, not afraid of our issues, the whole point of the scapegoat archetype is to hopefully highlight the family's issues so that we can change them. But, you know, growing up in a Southern Christian Black household, that was not the result. The result was, you know, being labeled a certain thing and being seen a certain way and treated a certain way. And still to this day, right? I tweeted either, not last year, but maybe a couple of years ago, I was watching Soul Food is My Thanksgiving Movie. And I remember putting this tweet out. I hadn't seen anyone else put it out. And I just put it, I was like, y'all, unpopular opinion, but Aunt Terry was the victim. Aunt Terry was the victim, and I feel like Aunt Terry in my family a lot. My immediate and extended. So I've always been kind of a part of a group, but also orbiting a group. I've never been in like the innermost part. And I see why, because like I said, you know, I had that label of like defiant or rebellious. And I look at King David from the Old Testament, you know, his brother, when David goes to bring food to his brothers, his dad asked him to do it. Mind you, right before this, not right before, but, you know, God sends the prophet Samuel to the house of Jesse to, you know, anoint the next king. And God had to tell Jesse, hey, don't look at his stature. You know, I don't look the way other people look. I look on the heart. And I love it because it's funny, and it's funny because it's sad. The prophet Samuel had to ask Jesse multiple times, are these all your kids? And Jesse's like, I mean, there's the youngest, and he's out there with the sheep. I mean, he's kind of weird. He writes poems and music and stuff. I mean, you're not looking for him. And he's short. Shouts out to all the short kings. Anyway, that's the one that God chose, right? The one that his dad didn't even think enough of him to call his name when the prophet Samuel came. The prophet Samuel coming to your house was like the Pope coming to your house. Can you imagine the Pope coming to your family's house and your parents not even saying, somebody go get David? Like, so imagine what that invalidation felt like. And so anyway, he's anointed king. He's still a shepherd, though. It's not until 15 years later that David even sees his throne. And it's not even the throne in Jerusalem. It's Hebron first. He reigns in Hebron 7 years, then Jerusalem. And so he brings them food. And his oldest brother, Eliab, is like, you just being nosy. He's like, what did I do now? I'm just doing what y'all asked. I see y'all all scared. And it's because of this Philistine. And so we all know the story. David slays Goliath. And, you know, we look at David and he was one of the greatest warriors that ever lived. And, you know, he has in one of his Psalms, he said, you have made my hands to war. And that resonates with me. I realize that he has made my hands to war. But this is the kicker. And this is what I had to learn. I had to learn how to pick my battles because, baby, especially my college days, I would argue with you. Now, you can say something I completely disagree with. I'm gonna be like, word. Because I don't have time anymore. When you understand you have purpose, you don't have time for stuff like that. There's a proverb that says, if you stop to throw stones at every dog that barks, you will never reach your destination. I'm pretty sure it's a Hindu proverb. And I realize that he made my hands to war, but my war is not against flesh and blood. It's against principalities and spiritual wickedness in high places. And the weapons of my warfare are not carnal, but they are mighty for the casting down of strongholds. So I realize that as an orbiter, right, as this scapegoat archetype, God has given me this spirit to kind of stand back and observe and to see things, even at a young age. Like I remember being like 10 or 12 and saying to myself, at around the same time, I'm trying to overthrow the patriarchy. Because like the men in my family, it's so interesting. When they were at home in their respective houses, pretty helpful. But when they came to Christmas or Thanksgiving, when I tell you they would sit down from the time they got there to the time they left, I mean it. When I tell you that they would not wash a dish, not even on Thanksgiving Day, to say thank you, ladies, for cooking, I mean it. And check this out, would be the first one to get a plate when the food was ready. I mean, it was insane. And so I just remember watching that and saying to myself, I want better than this for me. Like, I know God does not want women to be subservient. That word submissive is not about being subservient. More and more people are catching on now. But back when I was a kid, that was groundbreaking. And I wasn't a kid that long ago. I'm still early 30s. Like, so it's just interesting how far we've come as a people. And I realize in the fashion of Esther, I was born for such a time as this, but it was difficult. And it still is, because speaking truths that people aren't ready for is so hard. And so I just, the Orbital Tribe is what I name this, is because I know that, A, I'm not alone out there. There are some of us who, there are a lot of us who, even if you weren't as crazy as I was thinking that you could, you know, tell the adults where they need to shape up. Like, even if you weren't that nutty, you probably still saw it, but you had a good enough sense to know my time has not yet come. Like Jesus, you probably had that wisdom that Jesus had at 12, where he said, let me go home and submit to these people, because I am still a kid, right? So you knew to be quiet. And I did not, because no one was saying anything, and you just couldn't get me to come off of it. Now I'm just like, word, that's crazy. Wow. Like, I, you know, I don't have the time. And so that's kind of been my journey, my background. And, I've been on a journey of healing since I was like, I graduated from college. I remember my senior year of college, like the last week, all of a sudden, all this anxiety came, and I just went and trauma dumped on the therapist. Like, you know how at schools they will have a counseling center. I just went trauma dumped on this like really nice young white dude. And he just kind of looked at me and was like, I can't tell you a word he said. I just had to unload things that I had been carrying. And then around 23, I saw Meg Jay's TED Talk, Why Your 20s Matter. Young folks, especially my 18, 19, 20 year olds, please get that book. It's called The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter by Meg Jay. It changed my life. And it kind of started me on a path to wisdom. And then about, 4 + 3, 7 years ago, I started therapy with a, you know, certified Christian counselor. They are trained in like trauma therapy, like EMDR specifically. I was afraid of EMDR for a while. Very helpful. I recommend it highly. They are a cognitive behavioral therapist. I recommend that highly. Get to the root of why you do things, right? And just that moment that really changed my life, because like I said, I had that scapegoat archetype and that spirit that wasn't afraid to speak truth, even if it was inconvenient. But like I said, I was an orbiter, and I just really felt like I was on the outside of things. And you know, things didn't happen for me the way they did for other people. And I remember having, like, moving back into my mom's house and just having this come to Jesus moment with myself. But I'm pretty sure, obviously, God was in the atmosphere. And I just remember saying to myself, you know, let's pretend for a moment here that it truly is everyone else's fault. Every other bad thing in the world that has happened to you is someone else's fault. I knew that was ridiculous, but I said, let me go with this all or nothing thinking. At the time, I did not realize it, but I was debunking a cognitive distortion. It's called all or nothing thinking, or black and white thinking. And I was like, yeah, let's just say it's everyone else's fault. And the next voice I hear, I'm going to give credit to the Holy Spirit for this, was, now what? Now what? I had already kind of started my journey to like going full force at my dream of being a storyteller and actress. But I had hit some snags because I couldn't get a job even as a production assistant. At that point, I had production assistant. I had post-production coordinated. I had story assisted. I had been a coordinating producer. And I was trying to get like a production assistant job, which is entry level. And I couldn't get that. And so I was just in my feelings, feeling like a victim. And I just debunked that whole victim mindset that, you know, I had developed from just my personality type. In the sense that being different and not afraid to speak truth, you're not going to necessarily be that popular. Like, people will know your name, but maybe not for the reasons that you would want. And so after I heard Now What, I decided to go full force after my dreams, period. I'm not going to let whatever this is stop me. Because here's the thing. Like I said, let's pretend that it's everyone else's fault. Let's pretend that everyone is wrong and they hurt me and all the things. Wah. No one's taking accountability. No one's apologizing. Nobody's rectifying. Nobody's trying to do the right thing. So I can sit here and let these people win twice. They win first time for whatever thing they did, and they win again if I continue to sit here and not go for what I want. Your best revenge is success. That is your best revenge. And let me tell you something, baby. When you get focused enough, you're not going to think about them. I've had people apologize to me about stuff, and I'm like, I can't even tell you what you're talking about. I have no idea why you're apologizing, but thank you so much. When you get to a point where you are ready to go for the life you want, and you will not be disempowered, you will not let life and the issues of life dictate to you what you can and cannot do, friend, you will not remember. You will not remember. Some things you will forget. Now, some things cut deeper, but that healing is one of the best ways to get what you want out of life. Forgiveness really is not for other people. It really isn't. What if you weren't letting them off the hook? You were letting yourself off the hook. Because ain't no way I'm gonna lose sleep over somebody who is living their best life. Ain't no way. Ain't no way you about to get good sleep and you did me wrong. And I'm sitting here laying awake at night. Ain't no way. Ain't no way. Ain't no, I don't care who you are. Mother, father, brother, sister, best friend, boyfriend, girlfriend. I don't care who you are. You will not get more sleep than me. No, indeed. Uh-uh. So, you know, I want people to understand that they were uniquely and creatively made. I want people to understand they were uniquely created and made for something. I don't know what your task is. I know that I'm supposed to speak the truth, but in love. And I know that I'm supposed to do it as a storyteller and as a public figure. I realize that storytelling is so powerful. As a matter of fact, it's spiritual. And that's why Hollywood is so powerful. And that's why I often feel like, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel in Babylon, because the power that media has over culture and the minds of people, young and old, is, I mean, the only thing comparable to it is love, right? So I know that if I speak the truth in love through storytelling, I'm walking in the image and example of my creator. You know, Jesus would often talk to crowds of people who were illiterate. And so what did he do? He told stories. The Bible calls them parables. So storytelling is spiritual. And those of you who are storytellers, take it seriously. It is a spiritual job, especially if it's one that God has ordained you to do. Do not try to break into Hollywood if God has not told you to. I'm begging you. It's too hard. Like my daughter, my sons, if I can discourage my kids from coming into the industry, I will. Maybe one of them will take over the production company. But like as a producer, you know, but like, y'all, this ain't it. I'm telling you, like, this ain't it. Like being an actor, and a storyteller. Alan Richardson said on a podcast, he said, no one tells you that when you get to the top of that mountain, right? That mountain of Hollywood success. No one tells you that there's absolutely nothing up there. So if you're trying to become an influencer or an actor or an entertainer, that's fine. But if you're looking for it to be the thing that fulfills you, there's nothing up there. So that's episode one of the Orbital Tribe. All are welcome here. Come back and see us. I love you.